Hello and welcome to the Come Fly With Me podcast, where I discuss dream holiday destinations and career plans with my guests. I'm your host and pilot, Kenneth Fairweather, and today I'll be talking with golfer, engineer and golf course designer, Lucas Michel. Lucas grew up in Perth, Western Australia, completing his schooling there before moving east to study mechanical engineering at the University of Melbourne. During his degree, Lucas opted to do an exchange with the University of St Andrews and was able to play at the home of golf on multiple occasions. Not too long after finishing his studies, he competed at a 2018 PGA Tour of Australasia qualifying school in an attempt to get his Australasian tour card. He didn't get the full playing rights he was looking for, so decided to remain an amateur. That decision proved a fruitful one as he went on to win the 2019 US Mid-Amateur Golf Championship and qualify for the Masters and US Open. Off the back of this success, he has been able to get involved with many projects in golf course design and is currently working on the new Seven Mile Beach golf course in Hobart, Tasmania. Join me as we take a look into Lucas's early life and golf career and discover what, in particular, Lucas wants to do while in his dream destination, St Andrews. Enjoy the ride. Welcome to Check In, Lucas. Where are we going today?
We're going to St Andrews in Scotland, which is one of my favorite places in the world. It might be my favorite place in the world. So, yeah, it's just an amazing spot. I'm a golfer and it's known as the home of golf. So it's everything I love about a place. So, yeah, that's St Andrews to me.
Yeah, it's a lovely little town. And you spent some time there as part of a university exchange program in 2016?
Yeah, so St Andrews has the University of St Andrews has a relationship with the University of Melbourne. And I was in my third year of uni at Melbourne and I was made aware of the program, and it was kind of a no-brainer when the opportunity came up to be able to go there on exchange. So I applied and I got over there, and it's an incredible place. I didn't do too much study. I was mainly playing golf because as a university student, you pay £200 at the beginning of the year and you can play the old course unlimited. So I played the old course probably 25, 30 times in the space of about 5 or 6 months. So I was very, very lucky to have that opportunity. I was living right in town, about 200 meters from the first town, the old course, and met a lot of great people, not just golfers. You know, it's a pretty diverse sort of student population. So met a lot of people from a lot of different places and made some really, really good friends that I still keep in touch with. So it was, I'd say, just about the best 6 months of my life. Spending that exchange there. So that's why I chose it as my destination.
Yeah, it sounds like an amazing time. And in terms of getting on the golf course, was it just a matter of booking a tee time?
Yeah, it's a little bit more complicated. On the other courses, other than the old course, you could pretty much just book a time and get on whenever you wanted. But obviously the old course is in demand. It's probably the most famous golf course in the world, and they have a ballot system which allocates tee times to people when they want to play it. So we just enter the ballot, and I think there was some sort of preferential treatment towards locals and students. So we did tend to get in the ballot when we wanted. Occasionally we'd miss out, but there was always the option. At the end of the day, they have these things called dark times, which means that basically if you play, you'll likely finish in the dark, but they don't really take much to get one of those times. So you just rock up in the morning, book a dark time, and you'd always get on. So there was pretty much a guarantee that you'd be able to play whenever you're available, which was, you know, amazing because it is a very, very sought after golf course to play.
And it's pretty exciting with the 150th Open Championship coming up this year. Are you going to be tuned into that?
I'll definitely be tuned in. Unfortunately, I won't be able to attend it. It would be great to go over there and watch it. I was actually at the 2015 Open for a couple of days. So I have been to the Open. It was the only Open I ever watched. But I'll definitely be watching, and I'm sure I'll be just chomping at the bit, wanting to obviously play and play that golf course. I was hoping to qualify for the tournament, played the Asia Pacific Amateur in October, November last year, and the winner got into the Open at St Andrews, and I was tied for the lead through the first round, and I was outright leader partway through the second round, but I didn't play too well after that, so that was a bit disappointing. But that'd be an amazing one to play at some point in the future.
Will you be back playing the Asia Pacific Amateur this year, so maybe have another chance to get into?
Yeah,
the
Open? Yeah, I should be exempt, hopefully. I know they're playing it. Not sure. I think it's somewhere else in maybe Malaysia or Thailand, I think, this year. But I should hopefully be exempt. I think Australia gets 6 or 7 spots into the field, so I just got to keep my world amateur ranking high enough, and then I'll get an invite. So we'll see. Hopefully that'd be really good to get another opportunity to get an Open start.
How does the course look when you're playing it at university with a few people on the course? And then when you went there in 2015, was there quite a different feel to the place?
Yeah, I've played it obviously through different months of the year, and obviously when they put the grandstands up and all of that, it has a very, very different feel. But in terms of the course setup, you know, they don't typically get the rough super, super long. And they kind of just let it be. They let it play sort of as it normally does. So it does feel like the same golf course. Obviously the tees are a bit further back. I have played the Open tees because we played the St Andrews Links Trophy, which is one of the big amateur events. I played it in, I think, 2018. And yeah, we played all the way back, but it really is the same old golf course. It's amazing that golf's been played over it for, you know, 600 years, just about 500 or 600 years. It's incredible that the game, through all that time and so much change, it's still really the same golf course.
You grew up in Perth in Western Australia and played a lot of golf courses around that area. How do they compare to maybe St Andrews or any other places you've played around the world?
Yeah, Perth golf, the one thing I'll say about Perth, it does get very windy. And so in that respect, Perth definitely has some of the elements of Scottish golf, the wind. But obviously climate-wise, quite different grasses. I grew up playing a course called Lake Carronup Country Club, which is quite hilly. And the Scottish links courses are definitely not too hilly, particularly St Andrews, which is almost dead flat other than some quite big sort of rumples in the ground. So pretty different in terms of the terrain and the climate. But in terms of playing in the wind, I think growing up in Perth definitely prepared me for the Scottish wind.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of the lifestyle growing up in Perth, how did you find it?
Yeah, I think Perth's a great place for a young kid to grow up. It's fairly isolated. And when I sort of got to 17 or 18 and I was finishing up high school, I sort of had to think about where I wanted to go next. And, you know, going to UWA in Perth was definitely an option that I was really considering. But there were some other opportunities with potentially going to the States for college golf, or going to Melbourne, the University of Melbourne, which Melbourne's a big golfing city. So I had a few options on the table, and I liked the attraction of moving away from Perth, even though I loved the town. I thought the opportunities for a golfer like me would be better to seek out somewhere else. And although it was a great place to grow up, I'm happy with the decision I made to move to Melbourne. And it was a good decision in the end.
Now that we've heard about Lucas's early life, let's get to know about when he found his calling. This is a final boarding call for Lucas Michel. Lucas, your flight to Scotland awaits.
Both my parents were really supportive, obviously growing up through junior golf, of me playing golf. But they were kind of the sort of parents, they would sign me up for everything. So I did every sport, you know, cricket, footy, athletics, and then golf was sort of one of the ones I actually never really pushed me into, but it was the one that I seemed to be the most intrigued about and interested. So I kind of got into it myself initially. I had a next door neighbor who gave me a cut down club when I was, well, originally when I was four, but my mum thought it was too dangerous, so she took it off me. But I rediscovered it when I was seven and started whacking around the backyard. And then from that point, I was kind of hooked, and I ended up telling my parents that I wanted to buy myself a set of clubs for my 8th birthday, which I did. And then I think my dad took me out to the park, and I started hitting golf shots in the local park. And I was really hooked. And you know, from then on, they were much more supportive. But initially, they kind of thought it was just one of these little things that I'd be interested in for, you know, a month, and then I'd get sick of it. But I really stuck with it. They got me some coaching and put me into some junior tournaments. And sort of from then on, I was, you know, I was really into it. And they were a big, big support along the way, all the way through my junior golf.
After playing a lot of junior golf in Western Australia, Lucas headed to Victoria to undertake a degree in mechanical engineering and further pursue his golf ambitions.
Melbourne is probably, you could say, it's the golf capital of Australia. Melbourne is probably one of the top handful of cities when it comes to golf courses, the quality of the golf courses. The Melbourne Sandbelt courses are very highly regarded around the world. Obviously, Royal Melbourne hosts the President's Cup, you know, every now and then. It's the main course that the PGA Tour comes down for that event. So, yeah, it's definitely, I'd describe it as the golf capital of Australia. And in terms of the coaching, the golf courses, the industry, it's everything's based around Melbourne typically. So it did seem like the wise move when it came to the golf side of my ambitions. But I also had some other interests, and I ended up studying an engineering degree, and Melbourne Uni had a really strong engineering program. And so that was part of the pull of Melbourne as well.
How did you find the balance of studying engineering alongside playing elite amateur golf?
Yeah, it was difficult at times. I know my first year there, I struggled quite a bit because I decided that I'd take my studies part-time to focus on my golf for that first year. And plan was to somewhat try and prep to potentially still try to go to college, get a scholarship over there. So I was trying to play as much golf as I could, play in tournaments. But it was interesting because even though I was playing a lot more and, you know, playing on these great courses, my golf game seemed to get worse. And then at the same time, I think I was focusing so much on my golf that my studies sort of weren't as good as I was hoping. And I really struggled in that first year adapting and coping with, you know, the change in lifestyle and change to moving to Melbourne. So that was a bit of a battle, but I sort of found my feet in my second and third years of uni, and definitely felt more comfortable. The golf game started getting better, and it was definitely, you know, a balancing act between the two things, golf and study, because engineering is a pretty intensive program, as you'd know, and it didn't leave a lot of time to practice during the semesters, but I still did have pretty full-on summers of golf to keep my game in good shape. And I'd play all the, you know, the Australian amateur events through the summers and try to be competitive in those. So, I definitely kept my game in good shape, but I always knew at the end of it that I hadn't really given golf my all through that degree, and I didn't really see myself jumping straight into an engineering, you know, graduate program or anything like that when I finished up. So I did want to give golf a proper shot at come sort of graduation.
What do you think was the key to finding that balance in the second and third years?
I don't know. I think university, the type of study, I guess it's more self-directed, and I just had to find the ways that I worked best. I went to a good school in Perth, and kind of everything's given to you, and you kind of, you know, what's expected. And then I went to university and yeah, like I said, it's a bit more self-directed. So you got to figure out what you need to study. You need to figure out what you need to do well in all the coursework. And that just took some time for me to get used to doing that. But yeah, once I did, in terms of the study, I definitely felt much more comfortable. In terms of my golf, I'm not really sure what it was. I think it was probably a combination of, I was started seeing a new golf coach, and I'd seen the same coach in Perth for would have been probably 10 years almost. So then when I moved to Melbourne, I started seeing a new coach. He had some, there was definitely some stuff in my swing that we were able to improve, but sometimes that takes time to bed in. And, you know, swing changes are difficult when you've been doing something for, you know, since you started playing golf to try and change it can be challenging. And so I think part of the challenges with my golf related to some swing changes, which at the end of the day were really beneficial to my golf game. But yeah, it just took some time to get used to.
After university, Lucas started to shift more of his focus towards golf. And at the 2019 US Mid-Amateur Golf Championship, things really started to take off for him.
I graduated 2017, and then at the end of 2018, I tried for the Australian qualifying school to get into the onto the Australian golf tour. And so I sort of gave myself a year to prep my game in good shape for that. And unfortunately, I didn't play well in the final stage of the Q school, and I got some sort of status to play on the Australian tour, but it wasn't what I was hoping for. And so I decided to remain an amateur, and that meant I could play some amateur tournaments in 2019. And at the end of the day, it was sort of a blessing in disguise to not play my best that week, because it meant that in 2019 I was eligible to play the US mid-amateur, which is for people that are 25 and older. And it was my first year eligible, and I was exempt into it through my world amateur golf ranking. And so it was kind of funny because I didn't really have any expectations coming into that week. I just wanted to enjoy myself, play well, but I had already planned to turn pro the following week straight after the tournament because I didn't really expect to win. I was just there to give it one last shot as an amateur. And yeah, basically, long story short, I ended up playing really, really well and kept making it through. It was a match play knockout competition. And so I kept playing matches and matches and kept winning and winning. And then it got to the final and it was just 1v1. And I somehow pulled it off to beat a really, really good player in the end, and managed to win the tournament, which was incredible.
Lucas was scheduled to make his first appearance at the Masters in April 2020, but because of the COVID-19 outbreak, the tournament was pushed back to November. The US Open was also delayed and held in September rather than its usual June spot. Let's hear what he has to say about his experience playing the majors, some of the work he is doing as a golf course designer with Clayton, DeVries and Pont at 7 Mile Beach, as well as how he manages his time between tournaments.
It was a strange one. I actually got over to the US in March of 2020. I kind of knew, obviously, everyone at that point. It was early March. I flew on March 11. So it was right when things were really taking off with COVID, when some sporting events got cancelled. I think the NBA might have got pushed. The season got postponed at that point, March 11. And then I landed that day thinking, oh, no, this doesn't look good. So I actually got into Augusta. I was playing some early practice rounds the day that it was announced that the tournament was going to be postponed. So that was a little frustrating, but at the end of the day, I was there in Augusta, which was a nice silver lining. Got to play some golf over the golf course, got to prepare. And I kind of knew I would be playing the tournament. I just didn't know when I'd be playing it. And that eventually worked out that I did get to play it in November, which was unusual because, like I said, it was supposed to be in April, the course is quite different that time of year. It's a obviously different season, spring versus autumn, the fairway and golf course conditioning is quite different that time of year. It was quite soft. Weather-wise, probably wasn't too different. You know, it's similar weather, but just the whole setup of the golf course was quite different. So it took some adjusting, but it was kind of cool in a way to be part of that event because it was the first time the Masters has ever been held in the autumn. So it was, that was really cool in a way.
Yeah, definitely a very unique experience for everybody. Mm. And then without the crowds as well, that must have been, was that a bit bizarre?
It was a bit of a challenge. It was, you know, obviously you come in expecting to have your friends and family there supporting you. And with COVID and Australia's travel restrictions, I wasn't really able to have anyone that I knew there. I mean, I had a friend of mine who's a golf, he was actually my first ever golf coach. He now lives in America. So he came as my golf coach. And then obviously had a good friend caddying for me. But other than that, it was sort of a small crew of, just us three. And we did our best and, you know, to be the Aussie cheer squad, or they did their best to be the Aussie cheer squad for me. It was a fun week. It was a shame to not have my family. I'm certain there was probably some times where having no crowds helped a rookie like me play that event, because certainly probably would have been the biggest crowds I would have ever played in front of, although I played in front of some decent crowds at the Australian Open in 2019, but the Masters, a major championship, sort of a different beast.
What was the biggest difference that you noticed in terms of like watching on TV compared to actually being at the course itself?
Yeah, I'd probably say there's a few things. Like the golf course itself is fairly similar, although the greens have a lot more going on, like in terms of the slopes. Like when you see it on TV, the camera tends to flatten out the severity of a lot of slope. And so what I always thought was the greens were really fast and slopey, but I didn't realize how much like internal undulation they had versus like more just tilted. I thought they had more just tilt on them. So that was kind of one of the aspects. I think probably the other thing is like the beauty of the place. You can't really overstate it. Like you watch it on TV and they've got all the camera angles focusing on the flowers and all these like beautiful scenes. But until you're walking down the fairways, like right there, it just doesn't compare. Until you see it with your own eyes, it doesn't compare. So, they were probably the two things that kind of took me when I was there.
I've also heard people mention about, in terms of the, not just the slopes on the green, but the slopes on the fairway are quite significantly different to what you might expect. Like, especially like the way, I think the 10th hole is hugely
straight downhill.
Yeah. And like the difference, I think, between the clubhouse and the 10th tee is quite significant. Is that right?
Yeah. So you're right. The amount of the hilliness of the property is pretty amazing, because you watch it on TV and, like I said, the camera tends to flatten everything out. The 10th tee plays, it feels like it's almost off a cliff how downhill it is. And then, there's countless other holes. The first is not a flat golf hole. 18 plays so severely uphill. 9 plays down, then up. So, there's severe slopes on the property. It actually probably helped growing up at Lake Karrinup, which is a very, very hilly golf course. To grow up there and then to play there was, you know, probably a big help, because it's quite similar.
What did you find the most challenging part of the course at Augusta?
I actually struggled mainly with my driving and ball striking. My short game was really good. And it's funny, because most people would say the area that you struggle with at Augusta the first time is probably on and around the greens. But I actually didn't find that. It was more that my ball striking wasn't really up to the quality that I was hoping it would be. It was more my ball striking that I struggled with, but I was very, very comfortable on the greens. And probably part of that was playing and practicing in Melbourne, which the greens are pretty fast in Melbourne. And do tend to have quite a bit of slope on them. So I think that probably helped having that under my belt.
And in terms of the driving at the US Open, that would have been quite a challenge as well with the length of the rough around the course.
Yeah, it was definitely a pretty penal test at Winged Foot. US Open sort of known as the toughest test in golf, and the USGA who runs the event, they definitely set it up challenging. The rough was extremely thick and long. So whenever you missed a fairway, it was a real challenge to get the ball back in play. And definitely it was disappointing that my ball striking again at the US Open wasn't as good as I was hoping. That made it a challenge to get the ball around the golf course in as few strokes as possible when I was having a few too many in the rough.
You're currently working on a new golf course at 7 Mile Beach. Is there anything that you've taken from your golfing experience into golf architecture?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think I definitely have taken a lot of my experiences from playing golf in the UK and Ireland as well. 7 Mile Beach is, I would describe it as a links golf course, which, you know, it's obviously on the ocean in sand dunes. And that's how golf started in the UK. They used the land that was on the beach that wasn't any good for farming, and they decided to play golf across it. And that's kind of the same land that 7 Mile Beach is on. So I've been fortunate to have played a lot of great golf courses in the UK and Ireland. And certainly my experiences over those come in handy when I'm looking at sand dunes, trying to figure out, you know, with the architect, Mike DeVries and Mike Clayton, how a golf hole should be best set up. So definitely those experiences from over in, particularly in Scotland, you know, around St Andrews and a lot of those links golf courses, I think have helped a lot. But also, obviously, being quite a good player, the architects come to me quite often and we talk about how a good player might attack certain holes, because you have to think about, you know, all the different strategies that different players take on a golf course. You don't want a golf course to be designed just for a good player or just for an average player or just for a bad player. You want elements of the design to be interesting for players of all abilities. So they'll often come to me and, you know, get my opinion of what they're thinking, and we'll discuss, you know, how holes should be set up to work for me, but then also work for everyone else.
Would you say that that's one of the biggest challenges of golf course design, is being able to set it up so that it is playable for all levels?
Yeah, I think that's the goal generally. I mean, unless you're designing, you know, a golf course that almost is exclusively for tournament play, which, you know, is very, very rare. I can't think of really many golf courses at all that aspire to be that. But yeah, I think that's probably the biggest challenge, because, you know, there's such a difference in the way different people play the game, you know, from the absolute beginner who might only, you know, get the ball running on the ground 100 meters or even less, to me, who I can carry the ball in the air for 270 meters. You know, that's such a different style of game. And you got to think a lot about how different players play it, and you want to give a great experience to everyone, you know, everywhere along that spectrum, from the beginner to the elite amateur or professional. So that is, you know, the ultimate goal.
When did you first become interested in golf course design?
I remember being a kid and, you know, drawing out golf holes just for fun on a notepad. But probably I was 12 or 13 when Mike Clayton, who's now my boss, redesigned Lake Carenup Country Club, where I grew up. And I definitely took an interest when that was happening. They rebuilt all 18 greens and all the bunkers and changed some mowing lines and removed some trees. And I was really fascinated by the whole process and how they came up with things. You know, I was always you know, obviously an engineering kind of type mindset, but at the same time enjoyed drawing, sketching, and being quite artistic. And I think golf course architecture and construction really combines both. And I think, and obviously my love of golf on top of that. So I think when I saw the fact that golf course design and construction was a thing, I think all elements of it really I was attracted to. And I don't think I really forgot about it after that point. I think even when I was thinking about going to, you know, study engineering, it was always sort of at the back of my mind that maybe one day I could be a golf course designer. Although it's one of those things that, you know, there's not too many golf course designers out there. So it's a very small industry. So it's a tough one to get into.
And was it your relationship with Mike Clayton that got you started in this project at Seven Mile Beach?
Yeah. So Mike Clayton, when I moved to Melbourne, I happened to join the club that Mike's a member at, which is Metropolitan Golf Club. And Mike and I got to know each other very quickly and would play golf together all the time. And then in 2019, he split off from his former partnership and joined the Clayton, DeVries and Pont partnership. And he needed a little bit of help locally in Australia for some of the projects that he still had clients for. And so he sort of brought me on at that point to help him out with some stuff, you know, just sort of the more technical side of things. Mike's very good when it comes to, you know, his network and talking about golf course design and construction, but his weakness is probably in the construction oversight side of things. And so he needed someone with a bit more technical background, even though I had no experience, to help him out. And so I started, you know, helping him draw up plans. And then since I've had a little bit of on-site construction experience in 2020, I've helped Mike DeVries, his business partner, on a project in Michigan. And then last year I did another sort of internship in Florida with a guy called Gil Hance, who's another golf course architect. And so I've had a little bit of experience since. And then obviously with Seven Mile Beach on the horizon, I sort of saw that opportunity and jumped on it when it came available.
And do you feel like your this mechanical engineering that you did, wasn't it?
It was.
Do you feel like that's helped quite a bit with, have you used your degree at all throughout the golf course architecture?
It probably hasn't helped like anything specific. You know, knowing maths pretty well does help on occasion when we're doing talking about, you know, slopes on greens and grades and calculating, you know, basic sort of slope sort of information. I'd say probably if I did a civil engineering degree, that would actually genuinely be quite a useful qualification, because some of the drainage and soil stuff would come in handy. But I think the engineering mindset of and sort of the project management side of things, I took some project management classes. I think there's definitely elements of the less technical side of the degree that really help, just you know, problem solving and getting your head around how do you turn something into something else. Is that's all, everything of what engineering is, you know, transforming things. So yeah.
How do you spend your downtime during tournament weeks, and what do you like to do in your free time in general?
Yeah, so during tournaments, it sort of depends if I'm staying home. You know, I have quite a few tournaments that are local to me in Melbourne, and if I'm doing that, then I generally don't do much. I just sort of hang around the house, and you know, I might jump on the PS5, or I might, you know, go to the gym or whatever. But quite often I'm traveling with tournaments, and so I'll try to do a little bit of sightseeing. You know, Winged Foot for the US Open, obviously being in New York, it was a cool place to explore. And so I spent some time looking around New York, went to Manhattan, went to a couple of museums, Central Park. I think it's important to sort of do some things that take your mind off a tournament during tournament week. And so I tried to do that. But in general, if I'm not playing, you know, golf, I don't know, I'm probably just hanging out with friends, or just doing what everyone does, really. I don't think I'm an unusual person in terms of having really weird hobbies or anything like that. I actually like playing recreational golf with a few buddies that aren't particularly great players. They might be 10 handicaps, but we have a lot of fun just having a hit at Metro, where I'm a member, and that's something that I really enjoy doing. I think it keeps me interested in the sport if I can play it recreationally and still enjoy it. So that's definitely something that I try to when I am back home and I don't have tournaments, I still try to play golf and almost decompress by actually playing more casual golf, where I'm not marking a scorecard trying to shoot the lowest score on every shot, but I'm actually just having fun hitting golf shots.
And what would you say is the most difficult part about traveling and competing?
I'd definitely say being away from home, family, friends, girlfriend, like traveling a lot. It takes a toll on those sort of relationships. So that definitely can be challenging. But I do love traveling. I do love seeing the world. I think it's an awesome thing to be able to do. And it's one of the great things about, playing golf is the amount of travel that you can do, the amount of places you can see. It's funny, like I almost never go on just regular holidays because golf takes me to so many different places. I've been to Japan to play golf. I've been obviously to the US a few times, all through Europe playing golf tournaments. I've seen a lot of the world just sort of playing golf, and then on my spare time during those weeks, traveling around and seeing places around golf. It's been amazing.
We have landed in Scotland. Let's hear what Lucas has planned for his future and what he intends to do while visiting the home of golf.
Yeah, so I'm going over to the US this year for the US Mid Amateur again. They're playing that at Erin Hills in September. So that's something I'm playing. There's some other opportunities in the golf course design business with Mike Clayton and his firm. And so I'm still tossing up whether I want to turn professional. It's one of those things, like as a kid growing up, I always dreamed of playing professional golf. But the reality is it's extremely difficult, and you've got to be so, so good, so single-minded about it that so many other things have to take a back seat. And it's trying to figure out whether that sacrifice is something that I'm willing to make. And the longer I spend doing the golf course design side of things, the more happy I think I'm becoming doing this. So while the opportunities are there, I'm sort of making the most of it. So for now, I'm definitely sticking with the golf course design thing, but I'm trying to keep my golf game in good shape, just by practicing and playing as much as I can, and certainly, entering myself into some tournaments and keeping competitive, because I do love the competitive side of golf as well. So I guess the door's still open for both sides of potential career, but certainly at the moment focusing more on the golf course design architecture side.
Sounds very exciting. And in terms of when you get to St Andrews, what would you like to do once you're there?
Well, I guess the biggest thing I'd like to do is play the old course again, or even walk around the old course. It's something that you can do on a Sunday. It's a public golf course, obviously, but on a Sunday, no one plays golf on it. It's effectively a public park. So you can just walk around it, study it effectively. For someone like me as a golf course, architect now, to study that golf course, which is probably one of the best golf courses in the world, and understand, all the slopes and contours on the ground, what make it great. I think that would be really cool. So I think I'd probably go walk the old course on a Sunday, would be one of the first things I did, and then hopefully play it later that week. What else would I do? There's a lot of good restaurants, little bars, pubs. I mean, there's plenty to do there. I'm sure I could easily spend a good 5 or 6 days just relaxing and potting about town.
Thank you very much for talking to me today, Lucas.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, it's been good catching up.
That was Lucas Michel, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you had a nice time. If you'd like to get a little more insight into St. Andrews, head on over to my website, comeflywithmepodcast.com. And if you enjoyed this conversation, follow me at comeflywithmepod on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok, and comeflypodcast on Twitter to get further updates on the podcast. I have been your host and pilot, Kenneth Fairweather, and it was a pleasure having you on board. Safe travels, everyone. Frozen in time, stuck in my mind, thoughts intertwined with you. Pictures in frames, sharing your name, follow the path we choose. No one can take away the memory you've given to me. Nothing can change our history.